everyone. We have our special guest here at the end of the table. He's here to talk about the special council meeting agenda that's for this Tuesday. His name is Robert North. I'll let him introduce himself in a second. I also want to let you know that he has a preference of recording the meetings that he's in, just for reference, and he runs an online radio program, so this meeting is being recorded right now with this handy fan-dangled sound recorder. Okay, so we can just jump right into it. We want to spend 10 seconds each going around and saying the name, your name and what projects you're working on, or just your general focus. That's great. And then, Robert, if you want to introduce yourself, and then we can jump into the special agenda, which I'm going to pull up in the meantime. Go!
Who starts?
I don't know who starts. I gave a general direction.
Hi, I'm Jill. I'm working with the Human Rights Commission and the removal of the Mission Bells.
Hey, Jill.
Hi, I'm Pana. I'm a photographer.
Say your name again, sorry.
Pana. Yeah. I'm a photographer, videographer extraordinaire.
I think we met before.
Yes.
Yeah. My name's Hector. I'm with the Youth Focus Groups, Human Rights Commission, and Nonviolent Cities.
Thank you. I'm Robert. I'm with Free Radio Santa Cruz and also with various homeless civil rights groups, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, it's called HUF, and then another group called Conscience in Action. And this is being recorded so that people can't get to this meeting and want to know what's coming up on the Tuesday agenda. The special meeting will be able to do so, and also to hold council members accountable for what they're saying.
I'm Guy, and I'm on the communications team.
My name's Nick. I work on the Human Rights Commission. I work with homelessness. I work on community land trusts, and I work on the Nonviolent Cities Project.
My name's Jenna. I'm working on environmental projects, so youth focus groups, citywide composting, and food reclamation.
I'm Matt. I'm working on the homelessness issue, Human Rights Commission, food reclamation, and citywide composting.
So no one is working on city council process or?
No, in this group, but I've submitted an agenda report this morning with regards to agenda process.
Did you
saw that, yeah. Okay, so I don't see the special agenda posted online.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, which is strange, because I thought it needed to be, well, I guess it doesn't need to be posted until 24 hours.
72 hours.
72 hours beforehand.
Yeah.
Which would make it today at some point. So,
Saturday, I think.
Well, so I guess at the latest Saturday, but normally they have it up on a Friday. Anyway, the conversation is ordinance language changes as it pertains to a lawsuit that the city is settling around the inclusionary ordinance language. And then the other one is just cause evictions and emergency policies associated with protecting people from getting evicted. This will be more difficult because I don't have materials for us to really look at to provide you the context. Let me grab something real quick.
So they're having another council meeting?
Special meeting where you can't speak at oral communication, but you can speak on the agenda items.
Hmm.
And those two items, I guess, that he mentioned. And it's not clear what time it is. It could be in the afternoon, it could be in the evening. Watkins sort of makes it up as she goes, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to meet with the director of planning and the director of economic development the day before yesterday, I believe, to discuss the proposed changes that would take place in the Santa Cruz Municipal Code around inclusionary housing requirements. There are a number of revisions that they are planning to suggest, that they're proposing. I guess some of them are in line with the settlement agreement, and some of them they do agree, and others they don't agree with. There's a lot of them. There's a total of 27 changes that are listed on this document, as well as the information about the agreement. So, I mean, I don't really know how you want to approach this, Robert. If you have anything in particular you want to talk about.
Who's proposing?
Who's proposing what?
The amendments.
They were part of a settlement that was reached after a lawsuit that the city was hit with because of the agreement with the DevCon development downtown, which is, and Lawler development, I believe, which was, it is scheduled to take place and be established from Laurel Street to the Metro, essentially, is that big housing project that's mm-hmm. proposed down there. But the issue was that the city struck a deal because we have a measure called Measure O, I believe, which mandates that 15% of all new housing that's multi-unit have 15% inclusionary housing associated with it. But the city council struck a deal with this developer that it would lower it to like 5.5 or 10% or something like that outside of the 15. So the city got hit with a lawsuit for violating Measure O and not having enough inclusionary units. Through the lawsuit, there was a settlement in making some changes to the inclusionary housing requirements of the municipal code. And they vary from striking language around defining the downtown development area, the residential rental percentage rate, and then removing language talking about the ability to control. So this was one, you know, like section 24.16.0201B, which reads additional rent above and beyond affordable rent or affordable ownership costs may be permitted for the commercial workspace in the live work unit at a rent that is determined to be affordable to qualifying households and is proportionate to the amount of commercial space provided. Then it goes on for another couple sentences, but ends with essentially, if no agreement can be reached, the city will retain an outside financial consultant to evaluate and determine the allowable affordable rent and establish a methodology for determining future commercial rents. The methodology for determining future commercial rent level shall be defined in every affordable housing development agreement for residential developments that include at least one live-work unit. One of the things that the amount of the commercial portion of the live-work unit shall be agreed upon by the developer, the economic development director, and the planning and community development director. So, from what was explained to me with regards to this clause, this line item, however we're going to call it, is it made it so that if there was a live-work unit where they were charging for the living space and the working space that was commercial, then there needed to be some form of system to maintain a balance of the cost to make sure it's affordable, so they can't be charging affordable rent for the housing but unaffordable rent for the commercial, which would make it unstable. The criticisms from the city about it and from the directors that I spoke about was they don't like according to the settlement, apparently it requires the removal of any time the decision making is put in the hands of the development director or the developer of economic development or the planning director. They of course have a problem with that because it removes the ability for them to do things autonomously. I would imagine that it's included in the settlement because they want to make sure that that process is public and so that the community can hear about it, or it's made by the city council. So it's a really big, like I said, document with lots of changes and a lot of small print. So if there's anything in particular, Robert, that you want to talk about.
Have you spoken to Crone or Brown about this? Because they've been around inclusionary stuff.
No, I have not spoken to them about this yet because we had our meeting on Tuesday and we've been busy putting together the agenda report, which we submitted today.
Who signed the staff report?
This is, this?
Or that's not, there's no staff report yet.
No, this is just the proposed language with the struck lines from it. So,
what's your sense of the significance of any of these changes insofar as they impact the availability of this for low-income people?
Well, the problem is that even with inclusionary housing, it doesn't really affect low-income people for the most part, because it's usually, you know, classified as affordable housing, but affordable housing in Santa Cruz really isn't that affordable because of the incomes offsetting the median income price, which then makes it so that even people that work higher paying service jobs can't exist in the rental markets in Santa Cruz or to purchase a property. I'm sure that the settlement was designed to, because I was not involved in any of the negotiations or anything like that. I would imagine that their ultimate goal is to increase affordable housing and inclusionary stuff in Santa Cruz, but there's a larger conversation, I think, about in lieu fees, which is also a part of this, and I think it may be either an addition or an edit here, but it is, let's see here, yeah, under 24.16.030, the alternative methods to comply with inclusionary housing requirements. It addresses under section 6. The way they have this numbered is crazy. 6.2b. It talks about in lieu fees, and so figuring out, you know, talking about in lieu fees and what that means. So if those don't know, in lieu fees is when they don't develop affordable housing units, they pay cash to the city, and so then they build fully market unit prop developments and then pay money with this supposed assumption that the city's going to use that money to develop affordable housing somewhere else. That has been incredibly ineffective up until now, for a variety of reasons, including the city's consistent abdication of land ownership by selling it off or doing other stuff with it. So there's a line here, or multiple lines, talking about how to calculate the in-lieu fees and what that looks like for co-housing developments and for live-work units. This could be an opportunity for us to restructure the concept of in-lieu fees. Because other places like San Francisco, which when I mentioned it to the planning director and stuff, they said, well, San Francisco is incredibly complicated. It's graphs all up and down. But it's my understanding that San Francisco makes it much more expensive to buy out of development of affordable units than we do here in Santa Cruz. So the question then is, how high do we increase our inclusionary, our in-lieu fees to make it financially unfeasible or unattractive for a developer to not include the affordable housing?
Is there a deadline for this decision?
Tuesday, I imagine.
Is there a deadline in the sense of, if you move to continue this decision, would you be missing deadlines if the council agreed with
you? It's a part of a settlement. I don't know, because I have no agenda report, what the timeline of the settlement implementation is, but I would imagine since they have you have to put some serious pressure on them to schedule a special meeting. So for the mayor to prioritize this and create a special meeting just for this.
So this is the primary reason, not the Lower Ocean stuff?
No, yeah, the Lower Ocean stuff was added at the last meeting. And this meeting was scheduled specifically for this inclusionary housing.
Did Watkins add this Lower Ocean stuff unilaterally, or was it done by council vote?
It was done by multiple, I don't know what ultimately swayed her to do it, because I wasn't in communication with her about it. I know that I had made the motion at the last city council meeting to prioritize it for this most recent one, which I'm just really dismayed that my colleagues didn't even second me on, and it died on the floor, which was like unbelievable. I was like, I cannot believe that we're not going to prioritize this. But in those 2 weeks, people were displaced. The housing advocates were lobbying different council members, and from one or two other council members that I spoke to, there was the sense that they were going to try to get it on the next agenda. I think I spoke to one other person, and they said that they were going to try to get on the agenda, and I said, yeah, that's a great idea. We should have done it 2 weeks ago.
But nothing was done at the open meeting.
There was no vote taken at the meeting. It was just the mayor just saying, I want everyone to know that we're going to be agendizing this. So I would assume that the housing advocates encouraged it to happen, but that's a stretch. There must have been some kind of serious pressure put on.
If you had the time, what kind of changes would you like to see in the settlement?
The inclusionary settlement?
If you had, you know, yeah, another couple council meetings to push it.
Well, I mean, we can change the language so that it's in line with the settlement now, and then we can go back and revise it later. It's not like once we make these changes, it's locked in and unchangeable. So I would imagine that we do have as much time as we need for any other additional changes. My criticism is usually the percentage of inclusionary, which is only 15%. I ran in 2016 and included it in my 2018 platform that it should be at least 25% of affordable housing be inclusionary in new developments. And then the increase of the in-lieu fees to, like I said, to make it financially unviable to...
What would be the effect of making that kind of amendment, assuming you got a second? I mean, do you have any sense of whether trying to get a more reasonable 25% as well as higher in lieu fees? I'm not really asking if it's likely to pass the city council. What impact does it have on the budget of the city, if anything? Do you have any sense of that?
On the budget? I don't believe that there would be a fiscal impact to change those things, except potentially, I mean, generating more money towards affordable housing. If we increase the in-lieu fees and developers are still unwilling to build those units, then we can use that money ideally to leverage into affordable housing development. If we are willing to use city-owned land or start to use that money to acquire other parcels. That's the reason why I have some of these wonderful people working on community land trusts and figuring out that, as well as advocating for progressive tax measures that would increase taxes on the most wealthy in the community.
Is there any way to assess how likely this is to deter developers and so forth? Because that, I think, might be the argument used by the minority on the Watkins Council.
Well, the argument of, well, developers won't want to build here, which is what they said in 2016 when I was pushing it and all this other kind of stuff, is, well, what kind of housing do we want built in Santa Cruz? Do we want market rate housing? If not, then do I really care if they're not building market rate housing? Because no one that lives here already can afford that housing, and it's going to continue to gentrify the community. I would say that we should double our efforts then in coming up with revenue solutions and identifying not only parcels of land that we can acquire, but then also a strong intention on reaching out and working with either existing nonprofit development partners or expand our reach to try to find new, more creative ones.
Do you have a sense that there's support for this from at least two other members of the council?
I have no idea. I know that in public statements and campaigns that were run, that at least two other council members have said at one point or another that they support increasing inclusionary percentages to 25%.
Right. Gotcha. But who knows where they are now? Yeah.
Right.
So I haven't even looked. I'm just the first I've heard of the language. I'm no expert in any of this stuff. It's outside my province. That's why I'm asking these questions. Also, we don't have a staff report, so we don't see which faction, if any, is pushing this. Unless it's come up at council before, maybe it has. Maybe you've been aware of that.
This is to comply with the settlement, to my understanding.
Is there a discussion about that previously at city council?
The settlements?
Yeah.
Potentially in sessions that were not available to the public.
Was there any mention of it in an open session where there was any discussion?
I don't know.
Okay. Nothing comes to mind. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. No.
Small print as well.
Very small. Yes, yeah. Very small.
So I appreciate you're trying to, you know, open this up to the public, and I'm the only public person here. I mean, everybody else is public too, but, you know, so... I have no idea, you know, what... my tendency, if I were interested, if I had the context, would be to talk to Brown and Crone, or one of the two, about this history of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my predilection, what I would favor would be to go to the community, because the council doesn't sound like it's listening to you much. You know, you're getting on getting seconds for this stuff, or they're withdrawing their seconds, you know, it's bullshit. And raise the issue in press conferences, raise the issue in public meetings, raise the issue in the kind of meetings that you've been holding with the public over the last year in order to educate the community and ultimately put more pressure on the council. I know this is not the subject of this meeting, but you know, I don't know how far we're going to get with you're going to get with this, but I think you could also raise it there. You could say, I favored it 25%. In other words, I'd say itemize the specific reasons and make it really clear how this impacts low-income people in Santa Cruz. You were doing that, I think, quite effectively. You convinced two other council members to follow you in terms of trying to get the environmental report at the last meeting, unsuccessfully, but that's not the point. You made the issue, and that is the point. But the point is also, you're dealing with a rigged deck, and therefore what you want to do is go to the power behind the rigged deck, which ultimately, in theory, is the community.
Right, the people. Yeah, that's the thing, and that's why we have a communications team that's focusing on trying to raise as much awareness.
You giving it to me, or you want to?
No, yeah, I think I'll take that back, because that's for my ability to review and stuff. I just didn't know if you wanted to skim the language while we're here. Okay, so for the last... Well, with that, then we'll shift over to the next special agenda item, and before we say goodbye to you, we'll do this for the next like 20 minutes and just talk about it for a little bit to get y'all's input and let people know what's going on in the public and hear from Robert, and then we'll transition for the last 45 minutes into all the other stuff that we're working on. So, let's talk Just Cause Evictions. Who here knows what that is and or the history of it here in Santa Cruz?
Just Cause Evictions?
Eviction.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Definitely don't want Just Cause Evictions. That's
I mean,
sure.
It's Just Cause Eviction is basically the requirement that a landlord must give a reason to have a tenant leave their property rather than just saying, oh, you have to get out.
Right. So it has to be a just reason or a just cause for the eviction. A lot of times in Santa Cruz, we've had to deal with the issues of people, especially with the student population, landlords bringing people in, renting to them, evicting them for no reason, increasing the rent, and then bringing in new students because they can cover the cost of the housing, which then displaces local residents and other kinds of things, causes animosity between low-income renters and students and all these other kinds of problems. But at the same time, maybe it's not students, and maybe it's just someone buys the house, is a speculator, purchases the house after a long time, landlord has owned it and kept it below market rate and has someone there. Maybe they're older, maybe they have ability, different levels of ability. Maybe they're a person of color. Maybe they're just a middle class, you know, person that is there, but someone will come in, purchase the house, and then actively evict everyone, and then bring in new people at a higher rate of rent. So in February 2018, the City Council voted with an emergency measure which required 5 votes to enact a rent freeze and an evictions freeze, essentially, from February 2018 to November 2018, while they discussed the possibility of putting a ballot measure on the ballot, which then eventually was Measure M, which was not put on the ballot willfully by the council. It was put on the ballot through a signature gathering that was done by the Yes on M campaign. November came. Yeah.
Wait, they put a freeze on what?
Evictions and rent increases.
Okay.
So that was set in its policy to dissolve after the elections in November. So 2018 came, Measure M lost. The protections dissolved. Myself and Vice Mayor Cummings were elected onto the council, and that was our opportunity to enact Just Cause Evictions. Not Measure M, not all the things like the rent board or the limits on rent increases to the rate of inflation, not all these other kinds of things. Just Cause Evictions, which would have stopped people from being forced out of their homes. Unfortunately, the same people that are trying to recall me now wrote to the council in January, essentially, and said, if you enact anything close to Just Cause Evictions, we will move forward with a referendum. Anyone know what a referendum is? I see head shaking. What is
it? A referendum? Is it much more like where you try to get a signature and they try to vote you out?
It's a recall.
Oh.
It's okay, close though.
Yeah.
Nick?
A referendum's kind of like a
opportunity for the public to vote on like a specific policy. Kind of like Brexit is a referendum.
Yeah. Totally. So it was basically they collect enough signatures, then it will overturn the vote of the council and nullify the policy. Mm-hmm. And they, in that same breath, they said that if you do this, then we'll move against you with a recall. So that scared all of my colleagues in January, and thus made them table the conversation of just cause evictions, which was a vote that was 6-1. So 6 people voted to table the conversation. I was the only one voted not to table the conversation in just cause evictions. We haven't returned to it since. The state, however, just passed a bill, AB something rather, that 1451, anyway, that is going to enact just cause eviction statewide in 3 months. But there's a 3-month window between now and when just cause evictions will be implemented statewide. So what we're seeing in Santa Cruz, especially down on Bixby Street, is a mass eviction happening in reaction and anticipation of the just cause eviction laws going into effect.
Isn't there a year requirement that you be attending for a year before you're protected by just cause statewide in January?
Potentially in the state legislation. I haven't read the nuanced lines in every part of the bill.
Which may not impact a lot of the Lower Ocean people, many of whom have been there for longer periods of time, although I don't know.
People reporting 7, 10, 13 years that they lived there, all that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden they're being evicted. So at the, like I mentioned before, at the last city council meeting, not this most recent one, but the one before it, I made a motion to prioritize the conversation of just cause eviction on this last city council election or meeting. My colleagues refused to support that motion, so nothing happened. This last council meeting on this last Tuesday, there were scores of people, I kept count, probably over 10, that came and said, I'm being evicted, my neighbors were just evicted, there are people that were my neighbors that are now living in vans that had to move over the hill but are still working in Santa Cruz, all because we did not move on just cause evictions in January and subsequently did not move on just cause evictions 2.5 or 3 weeks ago. So now my colleagues finally realize the severity of the situation that's facing low-income people, so we're having this special meeting to talk about implementing emergency just cause eviction protections for renters between now and when the state enacts its statewide just cause eviction protections to stop reactionary evictions from taking place in that cushion, in that window. That's the back. So, any thoughts that you want to share, Robert, while you're here, questions that you might have?
Well, I need to acquaint myself and everybody here, too, with what the actual state law says and what kind of protections it will provide in January, if any, for the people who came to City Council at the last 2 meetings about to be evicted or having already been evicted. I interviewed a couple people who were already, well, they were going to be evicted in January. And so maybe their situation is not as bad. December, actually, one of them said. So we need to know that. And I guess you also don't have a copy of this ordinance before you, or the proposed changes. I assume it's an ordinance they're going to change, or a policy?
The city is an emergency ordinance, right, I do believe. AB 1482 is the name of the bill. And if y'all want to pull it up on your systems right now and begin reading through it to take any notes on things that you think are notable or stand out, the question is on the floor posed by Mr. Norse. Is what are the stipulations in the just cause eviction clauses of the document?
The other thing you might want to do is get out the information as broadly as possible about this special meeting. Most people I know don't even know about it.
That's Guy. So,
yes.
Guy, maybe in the next 3 days, shift your focus on blurbs since you already have a few done for recall.
Yeah.
And we can work on scheduling those to emphasize the impact that the gap of AB 1482 is having on reactionary evictions, the impact it's having on the people of Bixby Street, and the special meeting that's happening on Tuesday, the 29th.
Okay.
To enact renter's protections for people in Santa Cruz, and that community members should either write to their elected officials or show up physically at the city council meetings.
Okay.
To voice their support of emergency protection.
So you said the effect it is having on reactionary evictions, the council meeting that's occurring. It's an emergency council meeting. What's it?
Emergency special council meeting
special
on
meeting.
The 29th of October at 4 p.m.
We don't know the time yet, though. That's
4 p.m.
It is at 4 p.m.
29th of October. And the people on Bixby Street, did you say?
I will refer you to the city council meeting video from Tuesday, which you'll be watching anyway.
Okay.
And during public comment, which it happens at 7 o'clock,
okay.
During or oral communication, I have to say, at 7 o'clock, that is when the tenants and people that are being affected by this came and spoke
about
the
situation. Before the period as well.
And 2 weeks before.
Which would be at 6 o'clock. The previous meeting.
7 o'clock.
Yom Kippur.
Oh, right, 6 o'clock. Yeah, thank you.
Something it says is that opponents argued it would make California's housing crisis worse by spurring landlords to raise rents annually to keep up with the market.
That's their argument. That's the California Apartment Association, and anyone that's against rent control or just has evictions, that's their like core argument, is that by protecting renters, you're going to be hurting renters. And it's the most nonsensical circular argument I've ever heard. But goodbye, Pana. Have a fantastic day. Goodbye, Hector. Thank you for being here.
Good day.
Yeah, like, what do you mean? What do they mean by keep up with the market if the whole market is going to be capping?
Right. So the here it limits rent increases with
by 10% annually, I think.
Right. So I would imagine their argument is saying that if you put a 10% cap on it, then it would encourage landlords to increase rent by 10% every year. Even though right now there is no cap on rent, so if that were the case, then landlords would be doing it anyway. So
and they could do it by more.
They could do it by more if they wanted to, right? So what is the? There's very little, in my opinion, very little logic behind that argument, except for fear. And that is the number one thing that they use to fight against tenant protections across the board, is the fear of the impact on property values, the fear of the loss of rental units, which according to the study done up on campus, No Place Like Home, this is a great one here. Y'all know about that research that was done?
Mm-hmm.
So No Place Like Home, UCSC. One of the researchers up on campus named Steve McKay, along with Miriam Greenberg, did this robust analysis of housing in Santa Cruz County, looking at all of the different aspects of housing, the availability of housing, the cost of housing. And so from their robust professional research with graduate students and all kinds of other stuff, look at this guy's house. This is a picture of where he lives in a garage. They created these policy tools. And under the policy tools is production, preservation, and protection. But under protection, there's a fantastic section on everything about avoiding displacement, but also down here, arguments to debate rent control. And that all of the responses and rebuttals to all of these claims are found in this research document, which is amazing. But of course, the anti-rent control, anti-renter protection people just seemingly disregard the data and focus on their claims of economists and the economists' findings and all this other kind of stuff. So increased renter stability, like stability for homeowners, has broad social, economic, and environmental benefits. There's greater consensus, including economists, installers, and public policy and planning, is that tenant protections are successful in achieving their primary goal of stabilizing communities and mitigating displacement. So literally a 180. From that claim that the opposition is making, from what you read from the internet.
Drew, can you summarize the other two measures passed by the council? One regarding relocation assistance, which may have some, that's what, for example, when Darius spoke before city council as the last speaker in oral on that discussion, I guess it was oral communications last time. He claimed there's already a rent control measure in effect. And he wasn't referring to the rent freeze of last year that's expired. He was referring to the rental relocation assistance, which some people are mistakenly regarding as rent control.
Right. There's something called the exorbitant rent ordinance in Santa Cruz, which basically makes it so that landlords can increase the rent by 5% every year, except they can't raise it more than 7.5% in any two consecutive years. If they do increase the rent more than 7.5% in two consecutive years, then they're required to offer 2 months of relocation assistance to the tenant. The problem with that is that if you are living in a place and you are struggling, but 5% isn't going to displace you and 7.5% isn't going to displace you, it's just going to make you not be able to eat food, then are you going to take a lump of money and risk becoming homeless? Or are you going to stay in the property and starve? Or not be able to have the amenities to make your life comfortable, or not be able to save any money and build any equity? So it's a really toothless version of rent control. I still don't think that this rent cap that's in this bill is enough, because 10% a year is really unsustainable if you look at wages and how they haven't been increasing, they're stagnant. So how is someone going to offset a 10% increase a year rent hike? It's better than nothing, but it's still far from anything that could be considered truly effective rent control. So there's that, and then we said there was another one that you...
The second measure was the idea, supposedly preparatory to a rent control discussion in the city council, which some people still claim that we're going to have, because we're just down the road and all that, was the notion of getting landlord data.
Oh, right, yeah.
It was proposed by Justin Cummings. But of course, because it was a voluntary procedure, it completely relies upon the willingness of landlords to give data. Plus, they didn't even make a mechanism for doing it, but they're discussing a mechanism. You guys are discussing, or maybe even not discussing, because I don't see it coming up on the agenda.
Yeah, we have not revisited it since that.
And the point is, without that kind of data, you can't really judge, other than by such studies as you just pointed out, which, you know, maybe landlords can dispute, and I know they do dispute, but you don't have the data to show profiteering is happening, if it is.
Yep, totally agree. And a great example of why we need to have more robust and intentional conversations around renter protections. That's why this morning I along with Councilmember Sandy Brown and Chris Crone, submitted this agenda report that we wrote, focusing around the recommendations of reevaluating the agenda building process and responding to issues raised during oral communication and members of the public. So here, I'll make this bigger, so if you're interested while I'm talking, you can...
That's not something you're going to try to force on the next agenda, but you're going to ask Watkins about that.
If this doesn't get on, you know, what I said before is that if this official, signed by 3 city council members, turned in the week before agenda review, if it's not put on the agenda, then I will take the steps to force it on the agenda.
We're talking about the next regular session.
Right.
And so if it doesn't get on, Watkins doesn't put it on, at that session you will move to, or someone will move to.
I will move to.
You will
place
move
it on the next agenda.
Put it on the next agenda. Can you actually do that in theory at the special session?
Well, no, because it wouldn't fall within the timeline and the procedure that she has requested I attempt to follow. So I want to respect her request at least once since the time when she's made it before, because I haven't really submitted. I've been busy doing so much other stuff and doing background research with this wonderful group. We haven't submitted many agenda reports that haven't been accepted because we did the Green New Deal resolution, and I think that's the only one that I've submitted since the homelessness packet, except for maybe only ones since then. So we'll see. I want to try it out and give her the benefit of the doubt, and then if it doesn't come back, you can say, aha, I told you so, and then I will...
This resolution is coming up on Tuesday.
Right.
It's expected to be an emergency resolution. Is it not that it has to go, because for it to go into effect immediately, it has to be an emergency resolution.
Only 5 votes.
That requires 5 votes. It also requires some kind of emergency finding, which I suppose we're claiming that the eviction of all these people is an emergency. Was the February rent freeze just eviction of last year posed as an emergency ordinance for the same reasons? Was it passed as an emergency ordinance?
I believe it was posed, I believe, and now you have to go back and check the minutes because it's been a year, over a year since that conversation, and I wasn't on the council then, but I believe it was in response to people pushing for rent control, and then there being reactionary evictions because of their advocacy for rent control, and so therefore, to avoid there being reactionary evictions and to allow for the discussion to happen, they put on the...
And it got a unanimous vote.
I don't remember.
I mean, it was before you were elected.
Right.
And so I'm just... what I'm wondering is, are five votes going to be available? And then the secondary question is, you originally made a proposal that was seconded by Crone, but had to do with... that he thought had to do with specifically concerning the Barson Street...
Bixby,
thank you. The Bixby Street folks in the Lower Ocean. Then when you said, well, no, this is a broader resolution, he withdrew his second. Do you have any anticipation of what's going to be happening at this council meeting in terms of what, at least what your position is going to be?
I wish it weren't the case, but I have ceased going into council meetings with any form of expectation because I have been consistently let down and disappointed by the decisions of my colleagues.
What do you intend to do? Yes, or do you have a... You may change your intentions, but...
My intention is to go in and fight for justice.
But more specifically, the more narrow proposal of Crone, the broader proposal that you made at the last council.
It doesn't make any sense for us to only focus on Bixby Street because there are low-income people that live in places all over the city that are not Bixby Street, and for us to just say that this housing facility needs to be protected by just cause eviction and completely ignore all the other low-income people in Santa Cruz is not only a betrayal to those other people, but it is nonsensical. And unjust and inequitable. So, all things that I'm against.
You don't understand why Crone withdrew his second? Did he talk to you about that?
That was a couple days before the end of the signature gathering period. I don't want to say that this is the reason, but if we're thinking and looking at the history of the decisions that my colleagues have made in the fear of recall, tabling just cause eviction being one of them. I'm not surprised that that happened, and I'm not surprised that in the numbers that were submitted and provided to me by our city clerk, I have 300 more signatures on my petition than Councilmember Crone does.
You're a popular guy.
I'm a popular guy, right. So is that a correlation to me fighting for just cause eviction at that one? Is it because I'm the one that is, in my opinion, one of the most outspoken around these issues of injustice and equity? Or is it because they're targeting me more intensely because they know I'm not afraid of their threats? It's all speculation, but yeah, that's all I can do. All right, so thank you, Robert, for joining us for the meeting. I really appreciate it. We're going to shift back into our other general business, so I will ask that we bid you adieu, but
you're kicking me out.
But thank you for the time and the opportunity to share this with the public.
No, thank you. Thank you all for doing it.
Thank you.
It'll be available online if anybody wants to find it.
Yeah, where do I find that?
Well, I can give you a card. I have one. It's you go to a thing called the Huff website to get the. My number is 423.
What's the website address?
And there, if you listen to it on my show, which is going to be on Sunday between 9:30 and 3 in the afternoon, good luck with that. It's a long show. You can go to freakradio.org.
Freak Radio?
Right. But it's a stream. We aren't on the radio right now. We are on the stream, okay. The next stream. If you miss that, it's going to be posted on the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org under the name of the show, which is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. Like Robespierre with the word bath in front of it.
Okay.
And it'll say something like Drew Glover's Agenda Discussion 10/25/2019. So,
great.
And if everybody has any questions, I apologize for not having cards. It's 423 Huff is my number.
Thanks so much.